Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. If you have one of those voice-activated devices like Google Home or Amazon Echo in your house, we either have one at work already or you will soon. The integration of machines and humanity to create the workforce of the future is already happening. That's not news. The fact that we have a chance to form how that integration looks and feels and produces results is something we're running a little bit behind on, frankly.
So we all have to be very proactive in looking at the market and seeing where we can add our expertise and where we need to upskill and reskill in order to be competitive in this workplace of the future, and also given the fact that workplace structures are really going to change. So we need to be prepared to work in an environment that might not be what we are used to, and we need to be prepared to work with human-machine hybrid teams.
That's Alexandra Levitt. Her new book is titled Humanity Works, Merging Technologies and People in the Workplace of the Future. Ms. Levitt has also conducted proprietary research on the future of work, technology adoption, the millennial generation, gender differences and biases, and the skills gap. During the interview, we took a hard right as well into another existential change to working and society, the gig economy.
My biggest fear is around actually the gig economy. It's around the fact that I think most people are going to have to change their way of working. All of a sudden, people who've been working full-time for their entire lives, that's how they've been trained, are going to be thrust into these situations where they have to eat what they kill.
Alexandra Levitt's book is Humanity Works, and here we go.
It's Alexandra Levitt. I'm a business author, speaker, and consultant, and futurist, and a managing partner with People Results.
And I'll go ahead and mention the title of your newest book. First, I'll thank you for your time. And second, I'll mention the title of the book, Humanity Works, Merging Technologies and People for the Workforce of the Future. So on this show, there's a silver thread of a discussion around artificial intelligence. And some of my guests have told me that let's let the robots do what they do best and let us do what we do best as humans, which is create, make mistakes, and invent. And then I have the other side, which says we should fear the robots and we should fear the machines and try to resist as much as we can and hold on to our humanity through work. I imagine your book sits right at that Venn diagram overlap. Am I wrong in that assumption?
Well, I think it's a little bit more in the first camp. I think overall, I have a pretty optimistic take on the future of human work, mainly that I do believe that humans have unique skills such as interpersonal communication, judgment, intuition, problem solving, creativity, innovation, some of which you mentioned, that it would be very hard unless they develop consciousness in the near future for robots to replicate. So I think sit in that camp of humans should do what they do best, and we can have robots really as supplements to help us focus on the work that we consider to be most meaningful. But where I do sit in that Venn diagram, I would say, is the fact that I don't think this is something we should just passively sit by and watch and just wait to see what happens. I think in most professions, we see increased levels of automation, increased levels of use of artificial intelligence, and there will be some people who are automated out of jobs, or at least parts of their jobs are going to become automated. And so we all have to be very proactive in looking at the market and seeing where we can add our expertise and where we need to upskill and reskill in order to be competitive in this workplace of the future, and also given the fact that workplace structures are really going to change. So we need to be prepared to work in an environment that might not be what we are used to, and we need to be prepared to work with human-machine hybrid teams in order to really be of greatest service to our organizations. And so I would say that I'm more in the first camp of this is an optimistic situation that we should all look forward to and consider an opportunity. But I also think there are things that we need to be aware of. And that goes for individuals and leaders, too. Leaders need to be preparing their workforces, their human workforces, to cope with some of these issues that are coming up. And if you don't do anything, I think you're not going to be happy with what happens.
Yeah, so, I'm totally with you. We've seen how technology, when it moves fast and breaks things, like social networking and whatnot, we've seen how that can actually backfire very quickly and with great consequence. When you say hybrid teams, machines and humans together, it brings to mind Mark Benioff using AI in his board meetings. Is that a good example of maybe like a tip of the spear approach to hybridizing humans and machines into an efficient and effective workforce?
I do think that's a good example. And the best example that I like to use of something that's already happening in most organizations is the use of chatbots, where you might have Alexa in the office, for example. And Alexa's not a chatbot, but it's a device that works similarly, and that's that it operates on algorithms to accomplish very simple tasks. And you might have Alexa sitting in a conference room that's responsible for a particular team's meetings. And so Alexa will do things like pull down the screen, load the PowerPoint, order the food, make sure the announcements and the reminders are sent out about the meeting, might even take notes. So this is actually the function of an administrative assistant, and that's where you see the integration right now of these machines on most teams. And, of course, the algorithms can allow chatbots to provide different types of services to different types of teams. I'm working with one Fortune 500 pharmaceutical company right now where they are implementing an onboarding chatbot, and the purpose of that is to help new hires get acclimated to an organization. And so the chatbot comes aboard and gives you a lot of information and welcomes you personally and points you in the direction of resources. And so naturally, if you think about this chatbot, it is eventually going to save a lot of time and efficiency on behalf of the HR team and the individual managers. The one thing that I've realized has happened is that there are no fewer than 15 or 20 human employees working on this chatbot, because wherever there's integration of a machine on a team, you have to have a human behind it to design it, to build it, to deploy it, to fix it when it breaks, and then figure out what to do with it next. And that's a lot of people that are involved. So right. I think organizations underestimate, when they automate segments of their workforce, how much human input, we call it human in the loop, is actually required. So that's something to be aware of.
We're speaking with Alexandra Levitt. She's a researcher. She's also a consultant for Fortune 500 companies. She's worked with the Obama administration, U.S. Department of Labor, and others. Her new book is called Humanity Works, Merging Technologies and People for the Workforce of the Future. Alexandra, just this week, I spoke with the author of a book called The Science of Meetings, and he, like you, is data-driven in decision-making and in research. And when you mentioned the meetings in that previous answer, it brought to mind him bringing up remote workers and making meetings work for remote workers. Is that another area where AI could step in and help fill a gap?
I think so. I think that AI can make people feel like they are more integrated, can provide them with additional information. This isn't really AI per se, but I'm a big fan of some of the new technologies that are coming out to facilitate remote work, like augmented reality, virtual reality, telepresence, where you actually feel like, even though you're not there, you are a part of the scenario and you can be on equal footing with people who may be sitting there in a conference room or a board meeting. For example, you can feel like you're in the room, or like all of you are together in a situation that might be not reality. It might be a completely separate place where everyone can get together as an avatar. And I think that companies need to realize that remote workers can't be treated the exact same as regular employees who might be on site in a physical location. There are just certain communication difficulties. There are certain relationship building difficulties that happen when you just don't see people face to face. And I think we need to realize that it's one of those areas where we have to meet in the middle.
Right.
Because to have all remote work, it's just, that's not how human beings create. And I don't know if the author of the meetings book said this, but creativity happens when a bunch of people get together and they actually ping off of each other and brainstorm. That's where the greatest magic happens. And so you don't want to get rid of that entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think AI can hopefully facilitate people feeling like they are more a part of things than they might be if they're not in a physical location.
Yeah, if you're running a meeting, you really do have to change your skill sets. And that's learned, obviously. Now, if I'm a business leader, other than hiring you or a firm like yours, do you see training for this situation, this merging, this how humanity is going to merge with technology moving forward? Is that happening at the academic level? Are there business schools addressing this already?
I think business schools are starting to. Typically what we see, and I've seen this throughout my career as a futurist, that we tend to be talking about these issues, or those of us who do foresight, at the very top of the situation. So when we start to see trends and patterns emerging that have the potential to disrupt the marketplace, we start talking about it to hope that people will be proactive. Unfortunately, that typically doesn't happen, and people and organizations are focused on business priorities tomorrow. And they're not thinking of, oh my gosh, when I have a majority contract workforce, for example, meaning that 75% of my people are not working full time, how do I need to systematize that? How do I need to reconfigure my business and my operations to address that until it's on fire? And so what I would say is make sure that you are being, in fact, proactive about this, that you're looking at your industry and you're ascertaining, first of all, what skills are you going to need? And I'll give you an example of that. I did some research with my nonprofit, DeVry University's Career Advisory Board, last year on what we call applied technology skills, or skills that help you leverage people, processes, and data to make more effective decisions. And applied technology skills is not about knowing how to code, for example, but it's knowing that a software program is available that can do the coding for you. A great example of an applied technology skill is data security or analytics or things that help you build a website when you don't need to, when you don't have the exact coding experience, or application development is another one. So it's not necessarily knowing how the ins and outs of how that works, but that there are programs, there are tools available to help you do things, and you know when to deploy those tools and why to deploy those tools. So every leader should be incorporating applied technology skills into their training function. And this can either be done through a partnership with IT or a partnership with HR, or all, better yet, all three can get together to say, you know what, where are our applied technology skills among our general workforce? And how do we get them where we need to be? That's an example of the type of reskilling and upskilling that's necessary given these future trends that are coming in the workforce. Because if you realize how to leverage technology, then you're going to be ahead of people who just have no clue. I mean, we're talking about AI, but I think the average person doesn't know really what AI does, doesn't know what the Internet of Things is, doesn't know why that's important. So we need to really improve that. And I think if we start now, we're going to be in a much better position.
Yeah, that's really cool, because it seems like an opportunity to be super efficient and be ahead of whatever sector or category you happen to be in as a business leader. I love your take on that. And we have been talking a lot about our interaction with technology now and in the future. But I'm fascinated with your take on the rise of the gig economy, because I'm actually more fearful of the way the gig economy, it seems to be shaking out, than I am about integration with artificial intelligence. What do you see when it comes to the gig economy, and how are we going to cope with that?
Well, I love that you said that you're a little bit fearful of it, because if people ask me what's my biggest concern about the future of work, it's not that people are going to lose their jobs to automation. I too am not all that concerned about that. I feel like there will be a role for humans as long as we don't reach the technological singularity where machines become ultra intelligent, ultra sophisticated, and then we don't really know what's going to happen. But my biggest fear is around actually the gig economy. It's around the fact that I think most people are going to have to change their way of working. All of a sudden, people who've been working full time for their entire lives, that's how they've been trained, are going to be thrust into these situations where they have to eat what they kill. And they have to continuously market themselves. They need to reskill and upskill and be responsible for that themselves. Companies are not going to do that. And get used to a situation where you're your own boss and you're constantly on the move for new jobs. And that, I think, is not something that a lot of people are cut out for. Just like you have people today, like you and me, who are not cut out to work full-time in the corporate world, well, there are just as many, if not more, people who are not used to being gig workers.
Right.
And I'm worried about those people, because I think that is a very tough transition. I think they're going to be lonely. I think we're going to see the rise of support guilds and other organizations, but I don't think it's going to be fast enough. And I'm concerned about burnout. I'm concerned about psychological problems. And I'm concerned about productivity and efficiency with this, because just because we can work doesn't mean we're going to be doing our best work.
Right. Exactly. No, I'm with you. And tongue in cheek, sometimes I introduce Elon Musk as the man of many side hustles.
Right.
But it's like that. But not all of us have those skill sets that Elon might have, or the, you know, financial backing for that. And, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and you're right about productivity. I worry about that, too. And a quality of life, a happiness quotient that comes with burnout, like you said. I love that you were able to pull that forward into that answer. It also kind of feeds into another great part of your book, which is called Humanity Works, career customization. Can you unpack that for me, please?
Absolutely. So career customization refers to basically having a workforce of one, where the one-size-fits-all model of you have somebody come in and they've got a career path that's been already predetermined. They know they're going to go from point A to point B to point C. They can look at their boss and their boss's boss and see the path that they are going to take. Well, this is not how it works anymore. Everyone's career is going to be completely different. You're going to see a lot more lateral moves with people moving across the organizations to learn different functions, to be able to contribute in a variety of ways. If, let's say, one of their areas is slow or being automated, they can be redeployed in a different way. And people also have different attitudes toward work-life integration. They want to acquire a wider bench of skills. They're interested in being challenged. They are listening to shows like this, and they're realizing, oh, my God, I've got to reskill, upskill, do all these things that are necessary. Company, how are you going to help me do that? And so every manager needs to get used to having these bigger career conversations with individuals, and also needs to get prepared for the fact that people are not able to either whether they're gig workers or full-time workers, aren't able to do the same thing in the same way with the same hours at the same location that they might have done previously, and that things shift depending on if you get married, if you have a baby, if you want to pursue a hobby or a side gig like Elon Musk, if you want to take care of certain things in your life that may come up that are unexpected, and it's that happiness quotient that you mentioned. And so I think right now we don't see managers in a capacity to do that, and managers tend to have a very simplistic view that, hey, I want to hold on to my people.
Right.
I don't want to move my people into a different department so that they can go add value somewhere else. That mentality has to change with the rise of career customization. You've got to recognize that you're out there for the good of your company as a whole, and also out there for the good of this employee, because you're going to see that goodwill come back. Because while they might be full-time, they might go to gig eventually or contract work, they might, if they've got an expertise in your industry and your organization specifically, that's going to be of extreme value in a world that is facing a labor shortage. We don't think about this right now, but we've got demographics showing that there are going to be fewer people available to work, particularly in this country. So you need to make sure you're doing things to maintain and retain your top talent, and career customization is absolutely one of those things.
Managers, leaders, directors, department heads, they are not incentivized to share their employees and their employee skills. As you said, that's what that needs to change. Is that what you are doing when you consult with companies? Are you trying to change that mindset so that and convince them that they can be a Fortune 100 company if they stay ahead of this a little bit?
Yes, that's what we do with Humanity Works and all of the consulting that's associated with it, is that we try to help organizations see, look, you don't have to overhaul your entire operational model. Like, there are little tweaks that you can do. And one of the things we're focusing on is the employee experience. We're doing a lot with that where, okay, from the time you engage with a company during the recruiting phase, through onboarding, through learning, through performance management, and through transitions, which is what we're talking about, moving into another group, that we're focusing on what's best for the employee and what's best for the organization, and what are the specific actions that we can take at each phase of the employee life cycle to ensure these things happen. Because I think managers aren't consciously doing this necessarily, but meaning trying to hold on to their people. They just don't know how to have the right conversations about why this is beneficial to you, why it's beneficial to the organization. And so we provide them with the tools to have those conversations and make sure that they're happening. Because let's face it, everybody's really busy. So if there aren't specific actions that they need to be taking, some of this stuff's going to fall by the wayside. And again, we're going to see a focus on immediate business priorities. And I need to have the staff to do this work today, not sort of these long-ranging, big-picture issues that are coming up. So I do think that this is one of the things we're focusing on, among other things. The human-machine hybrid teams, the systemization of the contract workforce, and these are all things that we try to help organizations get their arms around, at least starting to make minor tweaks so that they can take small steps over time and eventually be ahead of their competition in this way.
Well, Alexandra, full disclosure, I am a marketing and management consultant as a side hustle myself, working with a boutique agency. And I have to say that I have fully bought into your secret sauce that you have fleshed out in Humanity Works right here. Wonderful approach. This has been a fascinating conversation. I hope we can talk again soon.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for taking the time. And I look forward to hearing from everybody about your feedback on the book and just this conversation in general. Let's keep the dialogue going. This isn't just about me. This is about getting these issues out in the open, and I think shows like this really do that. So
I appreciate that. I do, and I think this is actually a benchmark book that people should be reading. That's Alexandra Levitt. Her new book is titled Humanity Works, Merging Technologies and People in the Workplace of the Future. She also served as a member of Business Roundtable's Springboard Project, which advised the Obama administration, the U.S. Department of Labor, and the U.S. Department of Defense on current employment issues. Links to the book, Humanity Works, as well as her consulting firm, are in the show notes, either at KGORadio.com or here in the podcast. Thanks for listening. For executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.